Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Welcome to another episode of The Balance, my minions, the Taj Mahal, the Holy Grail, the Temple, the place where you need to be at on Saturday morning, and our friends up in the Northeast in Boston area who are listening to us today. Hey, you don't have anything else to do, right? My minions, hey, we hope y'all stay safe up there in the Northeast as the great Nor'eastern has plummeted across the Northeast, and we're stuck here in the beautiful Midwest. High atop our plush studios of the Balance Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana. Well, today is no different, guys. Oh, well, there might be one thing different. We don't have any more football to talk about. Got that football over with. What a Super Bowl. We'll get into that, some conversations throughout the show today. But what a good Super Bowl it was. I was delighted to see the whole Destiny Beyonce group at halftime. But the lights out, power out. I'll tell you what, for you know, the bars were loving it. Drinks, drinks, drinking it up. Super Bowl Sunday. Well, I'll tell you what, we had a great party here at the Balance Studios. I had to take a full day the next day to recover, but it's all good. We had a great time. Hey, we got a great show for you today. Of course, we're back to racing. Racing season is just right around the corner. And as you know, every week we have the Radio Speed Talk guys on with us. And today is no different, but except that we're going to be extending our racing talk to 1 hour. So our first hour will be a full hour of racing talk, because there's so much to cover in the racing world, and we know that so many of our minions are huge race fans. We've also got Josh Timmerman, late model CRA driver, on with us, going to be talking about his 2013 series in the Families of Hope car as well. And we're going to be talking with him a little bit about what he does with Families of Hope and Families for Hope, and what exactly Families for Hope is, and how you can help them in being involved with them as well. And, of course, Pomona right around the corner, guys. Valentine's Day kickoff, if you will, out in Pomona, California, the NHRA. I was on a conference call this week with the John Force Racing Team, John Force, Courtney Force, and the whole Force family and team, and talking about their 2013 series with the Mellow Yellow series. And I'm still trying to put my tongue on the Mellow Yellow. I don't think I've heard Mellow Yellow in so many years. Well, the Mellow Yellow series is sponsoring the NHRA. We're going to be talking about that. And, of course, well, the big daddy of them all, the Daytona 500 coming up as well. And then in hour number two, Mr. Preston Barr is going to be joining us from out at Kansas on college Saturday. We're going to be breaking down the college hoops. Yeah, what happened, IU? We want to know. We want answers. We want to know what happened in that last second shot. We're going to break that down, how IU, number one team, fell to Illinois out of the other assembly hall. And quite frankly, a very embarrassing loss for Coach Crean and the Indiana Hoosiers. I hope that they've learned from that. We're also going to be talking about Purdue, the Big Ten, and, of course, everything that leads up to March Madness coming up very, very soon, right around the corner. We're going to be filling out our brackets as well. And then also we're going to be talking a little bit about Major League Baseball and what's going on here in the offseason as we gear up for spring training. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Cactus League today. Last week we talked, tried to focus some on the Citrus League. And, of course, we were trying to get ready for the Super Bowl. And if you missed our Super Bowl show, you missed a great time. And we just brought everybody in, all hands on deck, and just you know, spent 2 hours breaking down that game. Well, guys, we'll be right back. When we get back, we're going to be talking some racing for the next hour. That's right. Racing is back right here on the Balance Radio Network. My name is Tom Mark with Sal Presidente. My minions, stay right there. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh. All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark with Sal Presidente, and it is good to have you back on board for our racing segment. And we're going to be talking about everything fast, and I mean everything fast, from NHRA to NASCAR short track. And we're going to have Josh Timmerman on here just momentarily talking about what's coming up with him and the 2013 series. But without further ado, the guy that puts it all together, the super glue of it all, the man with the plan who finishes off his Diet Mountain Dew right before he calls the Balance Radio Network, Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm really good, Tom. How are you this morning?
Man, never better, never better. I feel naked without football to talk about. I feel naked without.
I don't need that visual this morning. Good God. Hey, that's what we're talking about. Everything. We're talking about everything fast.
We're going to talk about everything fast.
Does that include your girlfriend, or is that just an expression today?
Bum bum bum. I'm gonna steer clear of that. But there's a reason I'm on radio and not television, that's for sure. Well, how was your Super Bowl, sir? Did you have a good Super Bowl?
I had a very interesting Super Bowl, yes. It was I didn't think it was gonna be all that entertaining. It turned out to be one of the better ones in recent memory for me. I mean, the whole momentum shift after the lights out, I found rather interesting. You know, when you sit and try to analyze a football game like we do all season long at whatever level that you're a fan of, whether it's high school, college, or pro, and what makes a momentum shift like that did so big and in such a big game is just beyond trying to really put a finger on it. I think it's all more inspiration than anything else, and it took the 49ers a little extra time to get regrouped and get going again. And you know, they're one play away from winning that whole thing. And they're still debating the call, no call in the end zone on that pass interference play. So I found it very interesting. You know, the Harbaugh brothers was a neat sideline. I just enjoyed the second half of the game, mostly because I didn't see the first half.
You missed the entire first half? Well, You didn't miss a whole lot.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, you know, I understand that we're having a little bit of audio technical difficulties today. We are working on those. But, you know, the thing about radio, Kenny, I just have to keep talking. And eventually I hope that whatever's in our system works its way out. But can you hear me okay, Kenny? That's the important thing.
Yeah. Things seem to be cleared up now. So I can hear everything you're saying.
All right. Now we're on a roll. Well, we're standing by waiting for Josh Timmerman to join us, and we're going to be talking about his season. And then later on here in the show, we're going to be talking about the 2013 Mellow Yellow Series. Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Kenny Barr. Why didn't you do a better drive or push, if you will, to make it the 2013 Diet Mountain Dew Series?
Because I'm already spending enough money on NASCAR. They'd probably put all their money in Junior's car more than – and they're not going to run you know, I don't know that PepsiCo or Yum Products or anything, I don't think any of those guys are actually in NHRA. So but I would think that the Mellow Yellow is kind of an odd name for the NHRA, don't you think? I mean, I think of Mellow Yellow as the San Francisco 69 hippie movement because you're just mellow and you're calm and yellow is such a pretty color. And it don't strike me as a fast, aggressive, roaring, beastly, manly racing type thing, but... Hey, if they're going to stroke the check, I guess we could call it, anything you want to call it if you're going to pay for it.
Well, absolutely, and that's exactly what they're doing. And you know what? They're getting their name back out there, as I said in my opening dialogue. I don't know when the last time I actually said anything about Mellow Yellow. It used to be kind of like the Mountain Dew for those of us that went to high school in the 80s and stuff. Mellow Yellow was kind of the drink of choice, but I don't know that since I've been in high school if I even uttered the words Mellow Yellow. Or maybe if I hear that song, and I don't know who sung it, maybe it was the Beatles, but Mellow Yellow, you do not want me to break out on that tune, but that's where Mellow Yellow comes from.
That was scary.
It was, wasn't it? Very scary. Well, we're standing by waiting on Josh Timmerman to give us a call here, and we're going to get into his season as well. But I was on a conference call with John Force Racing, and I think maybe I sent you over the transcripts on that, Kenny. I'm not sure. I know I sent them to Cliff. But about the John Force Racing team and what's going on in the Mellow Yellow Series of the 2013 Series, we're going to get into that. Also, NASCAR Cup Series just right around the corner. We're going to talk about some of the surprises and thoughts about that going into the Daytona 500. Now, just an overall view, Kenny, while we stand by here and wait for Josh Timmerman's call, just an overall view, if you will. What are the series to watch this season? NASCAR, IndyCar, NHRA. What are the series to watch, and what are the keys to those series as we stand by here and wait for Josh Timmerman?
All of them. You're talking about race nut here. Heck, I want to watch them all. I don't have time to watch them all, but I want to. Thank God for ESPN and Speed Channel, so we can keep up with all that kind of stuff. NASCAR, the Winston Cup division is going to be interesting just because of the new car. As long as they keep Stanica out of the media, things will be way better. You know, as long as they don't eat up a bunch of time screwing around with the Peyton Place of their love life. I'm going to watch as close as I can anyway, because I got to work during the day with the real job that I have. The Sprint Unlimited, and see how these cars really react in a pack, and people are trying to race their way into the big show there. And I'm not going to watch the front of the race. I'd like to watch the middle and the back end, but, you know, television cameras don't like to do that too much. Kind of like watching a basketball game. The real race sometimes is away from the ball. The real race is away from the front of the pack. You know, the guys running for 10th, 12th, 15th, or maybe that last transfer spot put on a better show than the guys up front sometimes. So I'd really like to see that and see how those cars are going to react and move and dance, and if it's going to go back to the old slingshot, or if they're going to figure out a way to run that Noah's Ark racing, the 2x2, or just a whole lot of unknowns involved with that, the NASCAR deal, the Cup deal anyway. The Nationwide is always cool because it's like AAA, you know, and there's a lot of guys that you see that you read their names coming up. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw where Kyle Larson landed a part-time nationwide ride here this week, and he's a hot shoe that everybody's talking about. I want to see just who's going to do well, see if Elliott Sadler does well with his new team and see if there's the same chemistry and communication that he had last year when he just about won the championship. I want to see Trevor Bayne kick everybody's butt. I want to see Joanna Long do good. And I want to watch the Dillon kid and see if he's going to just really go to the forefront like everybody thinks he is and be ready for Cup next year. So, and then the truck series, I know a couple of guys that from our area that land a truck ride every once in a while and stuff, and it's just kind of neat. The trucks are a whole different animal because the airflow is way different over the nose of those things and stuff. There's one Ford back in the truck series, and I forget who's ponying up the dough for that deal, but it'd be interesting to get them back in the loop as far as the trucks go because they're dominated by Chevrolet and Dodge that's just going to be fun to watch, the whole thing. NHRA, always entertaining. The young Force girl, this one's named Brittany, I think, isn't it?
Yes, Brittany's the youngest Force. I hate to interrupt you there, Mr. Kenny Barr, but joining us now is Mr. Josh Timmerman, driver of the number 9 late model CRA car. Josh, how are you doing, sir? Welcome back to the Balance.
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on here.
Hey, man, you know, it's always a pleasure. Whenever we can grab driver's time and have them come on and talk with us a little bit about what's going on inside the race car and getting their season ready for 2013. And I know you're driving the Families for Hope, a number 9 car. And joining us also is Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. Josh, so how you been, sir? How's the off season been treating you?
I'll tell you what, it's been really, really long. I'm ready to get going. I think we got about 2 months left. We got a lot of work yet to do, but we're excited. And this year is probably looking like it's going to be our best year ever. So we're really excited for that.
Now, I know you're working on some new sponsors that you're not really at liberty to tell yet, and that's good. Whenever you can see drivers like yourself pick up some new sponsors, bigger and better sponsors, it's always good for you, obviously, but it's also good and helps you in your marketability as well. Now, I know you do a lot of stuff yourself, and talk with us a little bit about what you drive and the series that you're driving and the series you're going to be driving here in 2013. As we know, last year in 2012, you almost pulled out the rookie, the driver of the year scenario. So tell me how that went for you.
Yeah, we had a fairly decent 2012. We missed a couple races for engine issues, but we found out we had a pretty big crash at the very end of the year last year. So the car definitely needed some serious repairs. So we've got a friend up in the Fort Wayne area that has taken it in and has completely redone the whole front and rear. So it's the car that we've got pretty much going to be a brand new race car. So we run in the late model sportsman series with CRA. So we ran about, I think we ran 9 races last year, and we're running, hopefully going to run about 15 races this year, and maybe hit up some Bearfield Speedway and Anderson Speedway for their weekly events as well.
Well, I think you ran 8 races last year, and top 5 and 3 top 10 in 8 races. Now, that's off of your blog there, sir, so I'm only quoting your blog, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's different, but I know you did have some disappointments. So looking back at last year, what are some of the things you're improving on from 2012 and moving forward into 2013 to kind of fine-tune some of those things that went wrong in 2012?
Well, I think that most of it was actually the race car. We couldn't figure out, because we had crashed, the front end needed to be fixed anyways, but had we not crashed, we would have been able to see how out of square and, kind of bent that it was. And so the front end was really bad, and the back end was even bad, and we didn't even think it was. So 90% of the improvements that we're making this year is actually in the car, which is going to give me the ability to, hopefully drive up to the front a little bit better. So the fact that we did as well as we did last year, given the current condition of the car, you know, I think that speaks volume for all the preparation and stuff that we do. So now that we've got a good car underneath us, I think that we should be very good this year.
Josh, we're also joined by Kenny Barr. I know you've had an opportunity to meet and talk with him a few times from Radio Speed Talk. So, Kenny, what questions do you have for Mr. Josh Timmerman?
Well, one that he may or may not want to answer, and if you say, I'd rather not, I respect that completely, but who's rebuilding your car?
It's Terry Fisher Jr.
Okay, thanks. I know Terry Fisher and all the Fisher family and several guys that put front and rear clips and stuff on, so I'm just kind of curious because one of them is my big brother, and I can pretty much say what kind of front end you were going to get, but that's not him. So a couple of real elementary questions I like to ask drivers in the off season. There's always, or most of the time anyway, there's a story behind the number you pick on your race car. So how did you arrive at number 9?
Oh, man. Well, actually, it's 09. I'm not really sure. When I was growing up, my dad and I, we used to go to the dirt track races in Iowa, where I grew up, and we used to watch one of my favorite drivers. His name was Gary Webb, and he was number 56. So that was initially our first pick, and then out of the blue, you know, my dad just had said, "Hey, what about 09?" And I think that part of it came from Bill Elliott, who was my favorite driver when I was growing up. So, and 09 is kind of an uncommon number, so typically wherever we go, there's not another 09 there. But it turned out, you know, I think it's just kind of a funny story that 2009 was such a year of, it was our first year in the late model, and it was such an awful year. You know, we crashed in the first race pretty hard. And then we rebuilt the car, went back to Fort Wayne a couple times, and then went back to where we crashed the first time and crashed again. So 2009 was a year for us that was rebuilding and just going through the trials and tribulations. But, you know, I tell you that it made us, every single one of us, it made us a better person for it. It made us respect the race cars, respect the racetracks, and just be happy that we're at the racetrack and are fortunate enough to do stuff like that. So 2009 was a learning year, and I suppose, you know, there was a reason that we picked 09, and that was it. So, you know, that's the gist of that.
That's kind of interesting.
Go ahead.
The other thing that I like to ask guys on the off season is, do you remember your first race car and where you raced it and how you did with it?
Well, yeah, I do. My first race car was a 1979 Chevy Nova. And the story behind that is when I was in high school, I was my dad and I were running around with an ARCA team. And the driver from Tennessee was Tim Turner, and they're a low-buck team, and that was his first race car. So we didn't know anything about racing, but we knew that we wanted to get in it. And this guy let us use his 79 Nova. So we drove down to Tennessee and literally dug it out of the weeds and spent all winter fixing it up, and we were not very good. I think we raced at Kokomo Speedway on the dirt track. It was my first and only year on dirt, and we were not very good. But I tell you what, you got to start somewhere. And looking back, you know, I wouldn't change anything that we've done, because we always take it as a learning opportunity, and we learn from it and get better. And I've always said that, you know, sometimes we're not as good as the big guys that are kicking our butts, but if we keep our head in the game and keep learning, there's going to become a day where we're going to be those guys that everybody's looking at that, you know, hey, we got to beat those guys. So, yeah, that was my first race car. It was a doozy, man. I think that thing must have weighed 4,000 pounds.
Oh, well, you won't get hurt in a tank like that, so.
Well, we're joined by Josh Timmerman, the driver of the 09, and that is my fault. I started that by saying the number 9 car because, you know, in real life, when we see 09, we just assume that it's 9. So the 09 car, and you are right, and I apologize for getting your number wrong, of the 09 now Families for Hope car. And I do want to get into some conversations about Families for Hope and what they are and what you do to help them. But I know that you're really looking forward to 2013 being a great season for you, and I know you're in the process of putting together a pretty big sponsorship that allow you to go out to probably about 15 races. Any hints to who that sponsor may be, or is that still really tight-lipped?
Yeah, it's still pretty tight. You know, we've got, at this point, we've got a verbal agreement. But like I was telling Kenny on Twitter last night, the ink's not dry yet, so we're not going to let the cat out of the bag until the time comes. And, you know, I think that it's several businesses, but that's all I can say at this point.
Well, that's fine, and we certainly respect that, and certainly we're going to be looking forward to making that announcement when that press release comes out. And I know Michelle and Leslie talk a lot together, and so we'll make sure that we get all of that posted when that comes together. But obviously you're looking forward to 2013. What are some of the key things that you're looking for 2013 inside your car? And whoever this new sponsor is, obviously money being one of those, that's going to allow you to go from 8 races to 15 races. That's a pretty big jump, and obviously a pretty big wear and tear on your car. So what are some of the things that you're doing to maybe be proactive to make your car last from 8 races to 15 races? Because you got to admit, that's a huge jump for any race car.
Yeah, we've I think that we're really kind of putting together more of a maintenance program and really kind of fine-tuning the way that we prepare our cars on a weekly basis. You know, the car and the engine will last 15 races if done properly. So, you know, the biggest thing for us is the weekly going to the racetrack expenses. So tires being number one. And we're hearing a rumor right now that there may be some sort of two-tire limitation rule, which would certainly help on that front. But, you know, the biggest thing is just money. You know, doesn't matter where we go, it typically costs us about $1,000 a week to go racing. So if we do get this sponsor, which we're, like I said, we're very close, it's going to pretty much pay for every bit of racing that we want to do this year and then some. So I think that being that we had the opportunity to upgrade the car, you know, everything is all essentially brand new. I think that, you know, we'll be ready to win some races, because that's what it's all about. We've been so close several times at Bearfield and Anderson and other tracks like that, but we just haven't been able to get it done. And I think that this year, with all the help that we've got and hopefully the money that's on the way, there shouldn't be any reason why we can't win races.
Well, we'll be following you throughout the 2013 season as well, and I know you have aspirations to bigger and better things, and I know that there's going to be some opportunities that present themselves to you in the very near future. So we enjoy talking with drivers, so we can always say we knew them way back when. Now, I know you're very involved. Obviously, you carry their logo on the hood of your car. I know that they're very near and dear to your heart, and that's Families for Hope. So talk with us a little bit about Families for Hope. What's going on with them, and what do they do as an organization as well?
Yeah, Families for Hope is a nonprofit that was started by Steve and Leslie Harley, who are very close family friends to ours. Essentially, what it is, it's a networking group and support group for a rare brain malformation called holoprosencephaly, and essentially, what that is when the brain doesn't split into its two halves. So, you know, it's very common among miscarried pregnancies, but fairly uncommon among you know, children born with brain malformations. So, a lot of this is, you know, helps get families together and doctors together to kind of spread awareness. And my mom took care of Stephen Leslie's child, Sammy. So that's kind of where the connection is there. And when I was growing up in racing and stuff, I always wanted to sort of attach myself to something and do it for the greater good of everyone. So naturally, I kind of latched onto that. So, I've been a board member for about a year now, a little over a year. So I'm on the board of directors, and we have conferences every other year. I think next year we're going to Texas. So lots of good stuff. Keeps us going. Keeps us. Our team has a vision, which is, I think, is very important. So,
Kenny, do you have anything for Josh on Families for Hope?
No, actually, we're somewhat familiar with the organization, and I think it's a terrific thing you're doing, Josh. I know it's more race teams and racers would get involved to the depth you are, and we would probably solve some of these nasty little problems we have in the world today. I commend you and your team for doing all that you do.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
And we do too as well. Obviously, you also have another great partner in the racing community, and we talk about Kyle Gimble, Grand Am Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge Series. And obviously, that's an upper level. Thanks, so you're certainly getting more national recognition with Families of Hope. Do you talk to Kyle much? Do you guys kind of organize some things together, or does he do his thing for Families for Hope and you do yours?
Yeah, we don't. We don't talk probably as much as we should. He's running around all different kinds of the company or country, and we're fairly concentrated here in Indiana. Although we have a connection with families across the country, he's kind of doing his thing, and we're doing ours. So.
Well, we appreciate all that both of you are doing, and Kyle comes on the show every now and then as well, and obviously we'll have him on the show closer to the time for him to arrive back here in Indianapolis. Now, when he's here local, do you guys get together for lunch or something and hang out? Or
That's always been the plan, but it seems that it never ends up working out. I think last year we had a race, and this year when it comes up, I think we'll actually be at Bearfield Speedway in Fort Wayne. So,
okay.
Yeah, we'll be out of town when he's in town.
Yeah, and you know he's got a whole entourage of people that follow him around now.
Oh yeah.
Well, Josh Timmerman, driver of the 09 car, Families for Hope car. Josh, any final thoughts you'd like to talk with us about, and where can people find your work? And I know you try to update a blog as much as you can, and where can people follow you at?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to thank the rest of my sponsors. Shoemaker Performance, who does my engines, Ellis Race Cars, and obviously TJ and Terry Fisher of Fisher Fabrication. We're actually going to pick up our car today to get working on it, so we're excited. Final thoughts, I guess. We'll probably be back on the show when it comes time to announce the big sponsor. But I think that our goal this year is to win races and. We're going out. We're very serious. We've got a good race car, and I think it's time to just get it done. So, along the way, you can follow me on Facebook, Josh Timmerman. I have a personal page and a fan page. Twitter at Josh Timmerman and joshtimmerman.com, as well as familiesforhope.org. You can connect with me through all those venues.
Now, one thing I want to also point out real quickly here, I don't know if you're aware of this, but my social media director and your PR person is doing a private campaign, and I thought, well, we'd use this platform to kind of do this. You don't have a Valentine, I hear, and I hear that you're kind of single and available. So I'm just saying, I know we have a lot of lady listeners out there. So we will do. I told Michelle and Leslie we would do our part. They're trying to find you a date here for Valentine's Day. If not. If you don't get one this year, I'm sure that the more you win races, it's amazing how the women just come along with that. I've always seen that happen, Josh. I don't know why, but so you know. So
I wasn't aware of that marketing effort, so I'll have to get with Leslie on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, she's doing a lot for you on your behalf. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Josh Timmerman, driver of the 09 car, Families for Hope car. We look forward to following you in 2013, and we look forward to you coming back on here and telling us about your new sponsor and in the 2013 series.
All right, sounds good, guys. Hey, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Josh Timmerman, always good to have him on board with us on the show. A great driver to have on. And it always is good, Kenny, to be able to look back and say, hey, we talked to them way back when. Well, we got to take a break. When we get back, we're going to go into our second half hour. That's right, guys. We're back to 1 hour a week of talking racing. And we're going to be talking about the 2013 Mellow Yellow Series and the NASCAR Cup Series right around the corner, right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Every time you take a sip in this smoky atmosphere, you press that bottle to your lips.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
I am Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
All right, my minions, welcome back to the second half hour of our racing talk. Joining me also is Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. Kenny, what a great conversation that was with Mr. Josh Timmerman.
I usually get in trouble with Josh at the racetrack because we get to chatting and talking, and somebody says, hey, we're supposed to be doing this or that, and we have to, you know, break it off quick, and off and running he goes. So, yeah, I like Josh a lot. It's a good egg. I wish him all the best. The only time that I don't want him to win is when we're racing against him. So that'll be at Bearfield in a couple of places this year. So,
well, absolutely. And I tell you what, I'll give you a funny story. Michelle and I were out at Anderson Speedway this past summer. It was the first time we'd seen Josh, the first time I'd actually been out at Anderson as well. So we were talking with him, and I was also went over on the bleachers over there with Leslie's husband, who's also the chaplain there as well in that series. But we were sitting there talking, you know, on the bleachers, and didn't think anything about it, went over there. And then I hear them calling my name over the intercom. It didn't dawn on me because I'm not used to my name being called over the PA system. So they asked me to come to race control, and I'm like, what the heck? And Josh looks at me and goes, what'd you do? I said, I don't know. It turns out I had lost my wallet and fell out of my pants. I didn't know it. Somebody picked it up, turned it in, and they called me over there. And
wow.
You know, but I was just like, what did I do wrong now? Am I not credentialed to be back here or what? But, yeah, Josh is a great, great kid to talk with and really enjoy following him and his success that he's having. As he mentioned, he had a little bit of a struggle there in the 2012 season, but hopefully with the new sponsorships, obviously with sponsorship comes money, and with money comes the ability to fix your car up a little bit better. So hopefully – all of that is able to come together for him in the 2013 series. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add on that series there, Kenny?
The CRA series?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I really like, oddly enough, I like the sportsman class probably as well as the Super Series that they got. Mainly because we've had some success in the sportsman class, and most of the guys are like Josh and we are, and a lot of teams are shoestring racers. I mean, they'll race from weekend to weekend. If Josh can land a sponsor that will foot the bill for 15 races, obviously, you do the simple math, that's about $15,000. That's a big fat sponsor for this level of racing. So I really hope that comes through for him. Because the guys who are successful at that level really are more creative and more fabricating their own stuff at times and have to come up with different ways and new and inventive ways to make that race car go fast. And they turn out to be some of the best fabricators and mechanics down the road because they figure out the whole racing game through the school of hard knocks. You know, I mean, in 09 he had an awful year. I remember seeing him in 09. And I didn't know him at the time, but we all would stand around going, man, I'm glad that's him and not us. So it's neat because everybody in that division, there's probably 15, 16 cars that make just about every show, and then there's guys that if they're racing at Anderson, there'll be a group from Anderson to try to run with them, or if they go to Angola or Birch Run or wherever all they go this year, excuse me, the locals will try to run with them and stuff. But I really like that division. It's almost, well, none of it's affordable, but it's almost affordable, and there's some awfully good racing going on there.
Kenny, it sounds like you're doing some running there. Are you on your morning jog with us, or?
Well, I was. I actually went outside and walked about a quarter mile, and it's cold as cold can be, so my lungs are going, hey, stupid, don't do that anymore, so... I'm back in the house warming back up.
Hey, well, at least you're not out there in Boston trying to tread through some of those snow drifts. And I know we have a lot of listeners up there in the Northeast as well. We get a lot of social media activity and stuff. And our social media director's brother actually lives in Boston. And so it's at least you're not out there. It could be worse. Well, we'll switch over to the NHRA and get some conversation in that a little bit before we, while we still have a little bit of time, and switch over to NASCAR. You know, there was a press release issued this week. Perhaps maybe you saw it, but as we talked about, you know, Don Schumacher and Spencer Massey really had a breakup. But really what it appears after reading this and talking about this, it kind of just appears to be more of a lover's quarrel more than anything. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about some of these question and answers things that were in this press release. And basically the question was proposed to Don Schumacher: why did you decide on November 23rd to part ways with Spencer? And his answer was, and I quote, "I could not tolerate his actions at the NHRA banquet on November 12th. The same thing would have happened to any of my employees if they had took a cooler of beer into a black tie affair while representing DSR. I wasn't at the banquet because I was in Chicago tending to my mom's funeral. So I don't know what else happened, and I don't go on rumors or gossip. I decided Spencer deserved a second chance." So, and we're going to go on into some of these other questions, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's actually pretty interesting of Mr. Schumacher because, you know, he got rid of him right away, and that could even have been a PR move because, you know, there's a lot of money involved with sponsorships and Fram and other people don't want somebody representing them who's doing things that don't put the best face forward, especially in a public eye like that. So you almost have to get rid of somebody, at least on the surface, and then sit down and get all the facts and get everything together, talk to the guilty party, and see what they're going to do about it. If it's a behavior issue, if it's an attitude issue, if it's time to part ways. And I'll let you go further because I read the same article you did, but I think Don Schumacher did the exact right thing because he's got a good kid there. He's young. You're going to – golly, Tom, how many times did we do something stupid when we were young men and wish we had a second chance like that? So I think you did really well with the decision making and the explanation both.
Well, and that goes on right on to the very next question, and then we'll move on to some other topics here in the NHRA. But the question was proposed to Schumacher: why did you decide to rehire Spencer? And his answer, I quote, "I never wanted to break up the team. I have spent a lot of time talking to Spencer, and he knows how wrong it was for him to do what he did. I believe that people sometimes, like you just said, Kenny, deserve a second chance, and this is one of them. I'm impressed with that Spencer made the decision to seek counseling for his temper. Spencer is one of the best drivers on the team." So, really, do you think that if Spencer was not a good driver, he would have been able to pull off a rehire? Or do you think that really he's learned his lesson? You know, a lot of people in certain circles compare a certain Spencer to a certain Bush. And I don't know that that's exactly the case. Bush has proven himself that this is an ongoing thing. I think right now what we're looking at is an isolated issue with Spencer Massey. Thoughts on that?
Well, you're exactly right. You don't know if Spencer decided to go get the counseling on his own or was told, if you want a snowball's chance in Hades to drive for this team again, you will go get counseling. And it really doesn't matter. Now that I said that, I think I wish you wouldn't have said that. But because it's just talking in circles, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if the young man learns from his mistake and he gets some counseling, that's a great thing. Now, the second part of it, he's the best driver for the team. I would say that's absolutely, because every week you and I talk about chemistry and communication. And when you get to the top of the mountain like they've been, they've got to have something really good going there between Spencer and his crew and stuff. So bringing in a new driver, you know, if they called you and decided to have you drive that top fuel for a year, it's going to take at least a year, maybe longer, for everybody to get used to everybody's personalities and communication styles. And when they say this, they mean this. And we talk about this, they really mean that kind of thing. And they've got that going on. So when he says Spencer's the best driver for the team, that's an absolute no-brainer.
Well, and absolutely. I 100% agree with that. Did you happen a chance to see the transcripts for the John Force Racing?
No, and I'm going to – when I talk to Cliff later, he's dealing with helping an aunt move to Elkhart or something today. So when I talk to him, I'm going to bark at him because I didn't get to see him.
Well, we'll make sure that we get a copy of that sent over to you. And I actually have those right here. I thought I had them up, but I'm going to try to get those up. And go ahead. What'd you say, Kenny?
Yeah, go ahead and fire them off over here right now. I got the iPad rolling, so we can pop them up pretty quick here.
Yeah, I'm going to do that real quickly here. I thought I had to have this up and ready to go, but you know, that's so much for show prep, I guess, huh?
That's okay. Heck, it gives us something to kill a minute with, you know.
Well, you know, what they have is they had a teleconference with John Force, obviously the 15-time NHRA Funny Car World Champion. Then they had Robert Height, the president, Courtney Force, over on, and as well as Brittany Force, obviously the 2013 Top Fuel rookie, and all on the call. And taking questions from the media. So I'm trying to pull those up. As soon as we can pull those up, we will. But let's talk about Brittany Force. And I do have that now. And I think it's going to be forwarded on over to you as well. What I want you to do, if you could send an email to Michelle@IndyProSports.com. That's our producer. She will get you the transcripts as soon as possible. So I apologize about that, Kenny. My fault.
No problem. We'll get it done here.
I thought you were in the loop there, you know, let's talk about some of the questions that were proposed to Robert Height. The question was, thank you, John. Robert, last season you and your team got off to an incredible start after Pomona. You had four consecutive wins starting in with the event in Phoenix. Not to skip over Pomona, but what are your thoughts in returning to the Firebird and to the start of the new season? Robert Height's thoughts are, I'm super excited. The last time NHRA had a new sponsor in 2009 was Full Throttle. I won the championship. I come out to be the first Mellow Yellow champ. That's my goal. And we all had good luck in Pomona. So what does Robert Height have to do with John Force Racing to make sure that that dynasty stays in place going forward to 2013?
Yeah, the same thing every other racer has to do. Be consistent, be communicative, focus on what needs to be focused on, both race prep and race day. You know, most races are won in the garage. They're not won at the racetrack unless there's some extreme weather conditions, and then everybody's on the same playing field anyway. You know, if the humidity goes ape, if it rains and the track gets swashed, if some bucklehead blows up and oil's down the track, all the racers have to adjust to that. So most of that work is done, you know, in the shop at Pomona, in the shop at Brownsburg, and that is where everybody really has to focus and concentrate on. And I think that's one of John's I hate to use the word faults because he's so such a great guy, but he is so popular that he gets distracted with the reality TV shows and guys like you and me want to talk to him all the time, and he really can't stay focused on the things he needs to be focused on all year long. So staying focused on the task at hand, and then I understand that you got to do the sponsorship appearances and all that stuff to make people happy, but you got to find that right balance, and that's tough. That's really tough, especially when you get to the level they are and all those guys. Mike Neff, who obviously isn't driving this year, but Neff and Courtney and Brittany and John and Robert, that's a tough thing for them, and I know that they go 7 days a week all season long, and sometimes I swear they go without any sleep. But in my opinion, that's what they need to do, is really focus on the racing first and everything else first and a half. I don't even want to call it second, but focus on the racing and the prep work.
Well, absolutely. And you brought up an interesting point that you don't think that the Force family ever gets any sleep at all. He actually alluded to that comment, and he said that he did take some time to watch the Super Bowl, but got busy doing other things, but did happen to see the commercial of the geek kissing the supermodel. So all I can tell you is that commercial, Kenny, I think spoke volumes for all of us. Although it was a little gross to hear after a while. I mean, they said it took over 13 takes to get that right. So
well, if I was Walter, it'd be more than 13, brother. I'll tell you that.
So we'll get those transcripts over to you right away there, and all of that interview's on there, and we'll certainly be talking more about John Force Racing as we move along. Unfortunately, we got to move on to the NASCAR series, and I want to just kind of touch on some of the things. Obviously, you look at BK, Clint Bowyer, Jimmy Johnson, Casey Kane, and Greg Biffle coming in the top five going in to the season this year, if you will. Daytona 500 just right around the corner. Let's talk about the Daytona 500. What are these teams doing now that we're in the month of February? Now it really comes time for to separate the men from the boys and getting these teams ready, because let's face it, people like us are going to be talking about teams all year long based on how they performed at the Daytona 500.
Yep, they sure are. And I love the Daytona 500. I wish they'd put it at the end of the year, but instead of the first year, but this was structured way back in 19, let's call it Sandy Road Beach in the 50s, what, 58, 59, sometime or another. So they got the big show, the first race of the year, and everybody gets geared up for it and pumped up for it. And maybe it's a good launch. Maybe it's a better marketing idea than I think it is. I'm just a pure racer at heart, and, you know, I'd like to see them build up to the big show at the end of the racing, and maybe that's from being a stick and ball fan and a football fan all my life, because everybody does everything at the end of the year. But Daytona 500 is a big one. That's when everybody, that in Indy now, everybody is just so emotionally tied into the thing. I mean, I can remember when Darrell Waltrip won the thing, and he did that terrible imitation of the Icky Shuffle, but he was just so emotionally charged up that, you know, you got a grown man crying in victory lane. And when Dale won his, I still get a little bit goosebumpy when I see replays of just about every pit crew member coming out to slap five with him, idling down pit lane. I mean, that's how big it is to everybody, right down to the gas mans and the tire changers of the low buck team. That's so cool.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're also gearing up for the Indianapolis 500, and I'll give you a little bit of a teaser. Obviously, we'll be talking about this later on. Here's what we're going to be doing in the month of May. Now, guys, we're in the process of launching a brand-new website, and we're going to really gear that up to you. Obviously, this is going to be the third website in our family of products that we have to offer, and we're going to be launching that very, very soon. So you want to keep your ears posted to that. But also, during the month of May, the entire month of May, we're going to be giving two reports from the track at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You can hear it right here at on Blog Talk Radio and through various different affiliates. And we're going to be giving you a report more midday and more late afternoon of what of the speeds and track report of what's going on there at the Indianapolis 500. Really, really geared up for that. And keep in mind also, we got a brand new website that we're going to be launching here very, 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 very soon, Mr. Kenny Barr. That's going to talk about everything that goes on in the month of May in Indianapolis. So it's going to be a one-place stop for you to come. We've got all of our Twitters and all of the stuff in place, got the domain done. We've got all of that done. We're in the process of designing the site now. So you'll be able to go and check that out as well, Mr. Kenny Barr. Well, let's talk about what's going on Radio Speed Talk this week. What are you guys talking about, and what are some of the things that we can look forward to from you guys in 2013?
Well, we're going to be traveling a little bit this year. We're still working on the calendar of where we want to go and stuff, and the times and the budgets and things of that nature. We are working on a couple of contracts, one with a local pretty big stick here to get on the air locally in Fort Wayne. We're all over the place, but our home base was sold and changed formats on us, so we're working toward that. But that's getting really close. Kind of like Josh, the ink's not dry, so I can't really say whom, but we're excited about that. It's kind of an interesting show, Tom. We didn't have a lot of show prep or a syllabus set together, so we sat down and kind of went back to the old format of a couple, three guys sitting on the porch bench racing, basically, or talking about racing. And it turned out to be one of the funner shows we've done in quite a long time. I think we dedicated a couple of segments to the NHRA and the Pomona race and what we'd like to see coming on and who we're going to root for and why and where and when. And the Do You Know segment is talking about tire soaking, which was a subject that came up a couple of weeks ago, and both Cliff and Tom were novices at the illegal practice of soaking tires to make the grip a little bit better, whether you're in go-karts or NASCAR. So we got a little education on that. And it turned out to be a really fun show. We sat down the headsets and just kind of smiled at each other and said, man, that's a good one. We enjoyed that one. So RadioSpeedTalk.com, it's up and running right now.
Well, absolutely, and we make sure that we try to share as much as we can with you guys on Twitter and so forth. We're looking forward to obviously teaming up with you guys in 2013 as well. Well, we're going to be trying to do use the word try because I know everybody has various different schedules, but we're going to try to be talking racing for 1 hour. Every Saturday here going forward until there's no more racing to talk about, which gives us quite a bit of time yet this year to talk about all the day. And there's so many different types of racing, and obviously we want to get into our various different short tracks and various different other types of racing, and we're also going to be spending some more time talking about different types of racing, whether that be the Baja racing or whether that be the boat racing. So we really are trying to expand because we realize that not all racing fans are exactly, you know, on a racetrack somewhere. There are various different types of racing. And so we certainly want to get into that. Well, we got time to go ahead and feature our racetrack of the week, if you will. And I want to talk about a track that's right here in Indianapolis. It is a kind of a different type of track, and that's the Indianapolis Speedrome. Have you ever been out there?
Yes, I have. Many years ago, when CarCraft Magazine used to put on their Street Machine Nationals down at the fairgrounds. I don't know if you were around Indy at the time there, but we spent 5 or 6 days in the summer doing that, and we would go to the guy I raced with and I, Speedrome and race at the time on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and we would go to both shows. It's a unique experience. It's still not on 16th Street, I assume.
It is. It's right in the middle of downtown Indianapolis. It's a very unique type of track. It is really one of those tracks that kind of scare you as a fan to watch, because it's like, wow. You know, obviously their first race is coming up on March 3rd, 2013. You can check them out at www.speedrome.com. And they've always got something going on there. It's pretty much every weekend, every Sunday night. And it is right in basically what I say in the heart of downtown. But they proclaim to have the greatest figure eight race on the planet. And I would say that's probably true. And if you've never seen a figure eight race, it's something incredibly different. And that's what I mean about scaring the fans to death, because you don't know where they're coming from on these figure eight type races. Any thoughts on that real quick, Kenny?
Well, they're right. They put on a great figure eight show. I was never a big fan of figure eight racing until a friend of mine taught me how to win those things. He never had the best car. He never had the fastest car. He never had the prettiest car. And he won an awful lot of figure eight races in his day, and this was 20 years ago. But he said, as soon as I hit the grounds, I act like a crazy man, and I let everybody know that I ain't stopping for nobody. No how, no way. And I got to hit a few guys before they think I'm serious. But he intimidated so many people with that. And, you know, you got to go through that intersection twice a lap. And if they know that here comes the crazy Tom Marquis and the foot's on the floor, you either get through the intersection and avoid him or stop and back up traffic behind you, because that portable weapon is coming after you, you know. So Dick won a lot of races that way. It's cool. I have never raced figure eight, so I don't think I'd have quite the cojones, because I know I'd be the guy who wanted to challenge the crazy man. But they really put on a good show, and I know I've seen them on Speed and ESPN a couple times from the Speed Room. It's just the right size where you don't get going super fast, so if you do get T-boned, as long as you got a well-built car, you're not going to get hurt. But the racing is really, really good. I'll tell you what, the midgets put on a great show there. The go-karts put on a great show there. Anything that's not a full-size something or other, because the fifth mile, boy, that's tight. That's really tight. So if you're trying to run a 500-horse late model with tires that don't stick to anything, that's a really tough show. There's not a lot of passing, not a lot of real racing. But the cars that are less horsepower and grip is not quite as important, they put on a terrific show at Speedrome with those cars.
Oh, absolutely, and I've had an opportunity to go out there a few times myself. Again, we've got them featured as our short track of the week. Well, unfortunately, we've ran out of time, Mr. Kenny Barr. We're going to have to call it quits and move on to college Saturday. We're going to be talking about some college basketball. You're more than welcome to stick around. I think Mr. Preston Barr is supposed to call in, although I haven't seen him show up here in my queue yet. So, and I sent him a text, so hopefully he's up and about. I thought maybe giving him a little bit of extra time will give him time to wake up. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I will.
I'll
tell you what, I'll give him a call, and then I'll call you back, all right?
That's no problem. Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. Real quick, Kenny, I know everybody can find you on Twitter. Where can people find you at?
Yeah, on Twitter. I'm at KennyBarr52. Don't be confused when you see Twitter entries about high school basketball, because one of the other many things I do here in the Fort Wayne area is I'm a play-by-play broadcaster for a couple of radio stations up here. So I talk about those things a little bit. We got a game tonight down in Bluffton, Indiana. And then when racing season comes along, you'll see more racing entries than sports entries. But KennyBarr52, and feel free to tweet me back any old time. I never shut my phone off, Tom, 24/7. So you can find me anytime.
Yeah, I have to do that every now and then, because I, you know, you're way more popular than I am, so I understand why you would have to have your phone on 24/7. But no,
I don't know about popular, but I need to do things, that's for sure. So.
All right, Mr. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk, sir, you have yourself a great week. And if you want to talk with us back on the other side on College Saturday, you're more than welcome to join the conversation, because we are certainly going to be talking about that big loss at Indiana University. From Illinois, what the heck, WTF? We're going to talk about that, break that down, and obviously some of the things to look forward to going in to March in the games of the week, just right around the corner, right here on the Balance Radio Network.
I'm sexy and I know it.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
That's right. Absolutely. Welcome back to the Balance My Men's. My name is Sean Marquis, El Presidente, and that was just a fitting bumper to play as we get into our first topic of conversation on College Saturday, those IU Hoosiers. Joining us now is Mr. Preston Barr. How are we doing, sir? Did we wake you up?
You must have, because I didn't get him either.
You know what? I thought that was him.
Well, I was waiting to hear his voice, but I got a funny feeling he had a late night studying, because he did have, I talked to him Thursday, and he had a full plate for the next couple of days, so he's probably sawing logs out in Kansas, so you have me, Tom, I'm sorry.
All right, man, you know what? It's just as good. We'll have you. That's it. You're just as good, man. I mean, we know you're a man of many talents, as you were talking about, how you also do the play-by-play. I think Gene Walker's going to be joining us here in just a bit as well. Well, let's talk about that huge game against Illinois. IU goes to Illinois, has a rough time on the road. Illinois was able to put some momentum together due to some good three-point shot shooting. And we've talked about it here on this show many times, IU not playing the same game in the second half as they played in the first half. This was absolutely no different whatsoever. So we look at the replay. Really, that was a big, big amateur mistake, unfortunately, cost them the game against Illinois.
Well, I will tell you that, oddly enough, the only part of that game I happened to watch was the last 3 minutes and 42 seconds, and that probably the Minnesota game that I only watched bits and pieces of, they played terrible, or excuse me, the Penn State game at Penn State when the first six possessions were turnovers on both sides of the ball. Indiana has times where they just flat stop playing defense and start playing awful. And then they have times where they're absolute world beaters. And thank God the world beaters is a lot more than the times they go flat. And the worst time to go flat is on the road in the Big Ten when you don't have a 500-point lead. And they absolutely just stunk the joint up. They didn't play any defense. That last play didn't lose a ball game. The last 5 minutes, or at least 3:42, of the lack of defense and not converting on offense is what cost them the ball game. I saw they were up like, 11 or 12 at the half, and I'm thinking on the road, hey, that's a good thing. You know, they got their act together, and they're going to break this number one jinx that the AP has been laying on everybody for the last month and a half. So, but they just absolutely go into a funk. I said all along it's going to be a 3 or 4 loss champion in the Big Ten, and it's turning out to be very true. Then they got to go on the road to Ohio State. That's not an easy place to play either. I don't envy that particular stretch of the schedule at all. But they got to play with intensity for 40 minutes and maybe longer if they go into overtime. You can't get into these lazy go through the motion stretches and think that somebody's going to lay down because you're the number one team or you're Indiana or you're supposed to beat them. So can't do it.
Well, absolutely, and we look at that shot that Tyler Griffey hit. Didn't even hit. It was an easy layup for him with just 2 seconds remaining to give Illinois a 74-72 victory. And I guess we look at it and we're like, well, they're the number one team in the nation for a reason. When you look at the replay of that game. I tell you what, I was honked off. I can handle sports, and I'm a big fan of IU, but I sit there and watch that replay, and I watch that replay. It's just a good thing I don't have kids living in my house because I would be eating soap. I would have done filled up the cuss jar because it was unbelievable. But then you look at the number ones that have fallen here in the month of February as we gear up toward March. So you look at the number ones that aren't winning when they should be winning, and this is the time of year when they absolutely should be. Now is this an end all and say all for IU? No, and I don't know how this is going to affect their ranking, but we will find out here in the very near future. But the point was that was for you say, well, that was a rookie mistake. Well, that was a rookie mistake, and maybe so. They're supposed to make mistakes. They're in college. They're not in pro. But that just seemed to me you had a two-man defense there on Illinois, and then Tyler Griffey just comes open and just whoop, just basically an easy layup for him. And those kind of mistakes happen in March. That'll cost you a national championship.
Sure will, sure will. And that play, I watched it a couple times, and I'm like you. I used to have, when I was younger, I was a little more rabid about IU, and I had kids in the house, and I probably should have ate some soap over the years. But the kids bought me a foam brick that I could throw at the TV so I wouldn't cuss and swear so much, and I still have it somewhere around. But Zeller got caught on a back cut with his head turned the other way, and that's going to happen. Basketball is a game that for as much as you and I and all the rabid Indiana basketball fans want to be played perfect, can't be played perfect. But the team that makes the least amount of mistakes wins every game. Doesn't matter whether it's turnovers, whether it's defensive lapses, whether it's that extra pass that needs to be made on the interior, whether it's not the extra pass, whether it's head fake. But the team that makes the least amount of mistakes wins. And occasionally, coaching will win you a game or two here and there, maybe 2 or 3 a year. If you just outguess the other coach or you outthink him or you surprise him with something that you haven't popped out there on a regular basis. So as much as we want that game to be played perfect, it just can't be. Cody Zeller got caught with his head turned the other way, and Illinois was on their game. And I forget the kid's name, he just mentioned it. You know, he just
– Tyler Griffin.
Nice little back cut. Yeah, nice little back cut. The kid taking it out of bounds threw him, you know, the perfect in-hand pass. And she's over with. But a lot of fans think that lost them the ball game. Absolutely not. The play throughout the course of the whole game, especially the last 5 minutes of the game, is what lost them the ball game.
Well, and absolutely, and you couldn't have nailed that. We want to look at that play and say, oh, well, the point is they should have never been in that in the first place. Then you look at tomorrow, and you said it yourself, they've got to go to Ohio State, and again, any road game in the Big Ten is hard to win, but, Ohio State is one that always gives them a struggle. They play tomorrow at 1 o'clock, so let's look at that Ohio State-Buckeye game real quickly, and then we're going to get into today's games. Thoughts and keys to the game. Indiana's obviously going to be breaking down, like you said, that last 5 minutes. And I think that they're certainly a team that can, that no pun intended, can rebound from a loss like this. And they take it and they learn from it, and they go back. And Coach Cream is one of those type of coaches that he will watch it, break it down, analyze it. And they aren't going to make the same mistake twice. But let's talk about this. Obviously, Indiana's got to get some momentum heavy and early and fast and carry it through the entire game in order to beat Ohio State at home.
Indiana doesn't have a problem scoring points usually. At one time they were the best scoring team in the country, now I think they're just third or fourth. Offensively, I think they're okay. If any team, they don't live by the three, thankfully, but they certainly thrive by the three when things are going really well for them. The keys to the game there, they're going to have to, I think, first of all, shut down Deshaun Thomas, the Fort Wayne native, whom I've actually covered for a couple of years. Deshaun doesn't play defense, but he's got the NBA game where I won't call him the black hole, but we'll call him the brown hole. Most of the time you throw it to him and he ain't coming back out. They got to get somebody to keep him probably under 15 would be my guess. He's the leading scorer in the Big Ten. He can shoot from the outside. He can get in and rebound. He can do the offensive glass work. Shut down Deshaun Thomas. And the other thing you need to do is keep Kraft from finding the open man and finding those seams where he can throw the pass to, and keep him from driving if they can. If they do those two things and then take care of the normal rebounding and running the offense well, they'll win at Ohio State. Now, with that being said, making it sound too simplistic, that's not so easy because Thomas is a good ball player, Kraft is a good ball player, and Thad Matta knows that that's what everybody's going to key on against Ohio State. So, interesting ball game. I don't know. I'll probably try to watch more than 3 minutes and 42 seconds of it. Unless Indiana's behind, then I'll shut it off and read reviews.
I understand you're one of those bandwagon fans. Now, what I want to do, I have this done and ready for Preston, we're going to have to do it with you. Kansas Oklahoma preview. Good game. I tell you what, a good game on tap here. If Kansas is to continue in its recent success against Oklahoma, it must find a way to break out of a current rough stretch that that has Coach Bill Self. Can you imagine? Can you imagine growing up with a last name like Self and then being a coach and then getting married? You know what the favorite term is to say, thanks to Dr. Field, it's all about you, isn't it? It's all about you, isn't it? It's all about yourself, isn't it? Well, it's all about Coach Self out at Kansas, and he's got to find a way to get the fifth-ranked Jayhawks out of a way to avoid a three-game losing streak that hasn't happened in almost 8 years. So, obviously, by association, I know you follow the Jayhawks as well. And we have this game all geared up for Preston, so you got to bring the excitement, brother. You got to bring the A game for this game. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I can't tell you anything about Oklahoma. I feel as hell, sir. Well, I was kind of on Preston too because I kind of wanted to hear what the scoop is there because he keeps an eye on that whole conference way better than I do. Since we stuck him in the middle of the country, he's got a little better access to the media over there and stuff doing that. I do know that I talked to him after the TCU game that Kansas only scored a grand total of 12 points and a half, which really stunned the whole basketball nation. But he said it was one of those games that every team seems to have every once in a while, and you just have to throw it in the garbage and not even talk about it and pretend it didn't happen and then move forward. Because you did everything you could. You tried to rebound. You tried to score. You tried to do things, and it just wasn't your night. And that'll happen to a team now and then. Storied programs like Kansas and Indiana and and some of the other powerhouses over the years, they've all had stinkers here and there, and that was his explanation for the TCU game. Now, I haven't talked to him since then, so I was really looking forward to his insight and analysis today. Kansas just has to get back to playing Kansas basketball. That's all there is to it. They're one of the best teams in the country when they want to play well, just like IU, not having those five-minute funks, you know. If they play hard for 40 minutes and stay focused, they're going to be tough to beat, and I think they'll be able to handle Oklahoma. Now, again, is it at Oklahoma or is that at Allen Fieldhouse, do you know?
It is at Oklahoma.
Okay, well, you know, winning on the road is never easy. I think the toughest road trips in the year are the Big Ten because of such as the big balance and the big power. Big Ten's the best conference in the country this year. But when you go to somebody else's house that ain't a bad ball club, hang on. I mean, Illinois was, 2-7 when they took it down to Indiana. So, and TCU wasn't anything that was a media darling or got any AP love, and they ended up beating Kansas. So you got to show up with your A game or you're going to end up getting beat every time.
Well, absolutely. And you look at, you know, we're going to move on to some other games of the day here. You look at when they played back in January 26th and against and they played at Kansas at that point. Also joining us now is Mr. Gene Walker of Indiana Talks. Gene, how you doing, sir?
Good day, Tom. How are you doing?
Hey, fantastic. We were just talking, and you can go ahead and give us this thoughts, and we'll bounce back to this Kansas-Oklahoma game. But did you happen to see the IU-Illinois loss and the loss to Illinois? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I did. I saw the game, and it goes back to what I was saying before about Indiana. I made the comment about maybe 2 weeks before that. I wondered if, in fact, Indiana is going to be a closing team this year. And I think that's been a sentiment that's been echoed from, you know, from other people as well. Are they going to be a team that closes the door or not? You know, are they going to be a team that gets the job done and goes out and hammers the deal down? They had this game, and then they went and basically didn't shut the deal down. I don't know why in the world the Illinois Fighting Illini could even get back in that game to begin with. That should have never come down to a final shot.
Oh, absolutely. We were just talking about that. I know you missed out on that, and that's exactly what Kenny was saying. They lost that game 5 minutes before the end of that game, and they have to be able to come. Indiana's a great team, a great ball club. I'm certainly not bashing them for a loss, but when you're number one, you can't lose in the final seconds to a team like Illinois and begin to lose that game with 5 minutes left in the game. But we'll certainly be monitoring them. We want to get back to this Kansas-Oklahoma game. And we talk about the last matchup that they had. Jeff Whitney made life miserable for Oklahoma in just about every way. But, you know, what a difference between January 26th and now happens. Obviously, that big seven-footer that the Jayhawks have, block shots, also three steals and so forth. So, as we talked about, going playing on the road, in whether it's the Big Ten, the Big 12, whatever it might be, it's always hard, especially in a college-type atmosphere, to play on the road. And this can't be any different than for Kansas. And the Jayhawks, quite simply, are feeling like like they're being bullied by everybody, and everybody says, hey, let me take a shot at Kansas. Let me take a shot at Kansas. And the last three losses have really shown that they feel like they've gotten beat up on the playground. Kenny?
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes you wonder where the leadership is and where the maturity is on that team. Willie, it's kind of fun to watch. He doesn't look like a basketball player, but he gets the job done, doesn't he? The long, gangly thing, it looks like a little giraffe out there sometimes. Major shot blocker. Not an offensive threat, but he gets 8, 10, 12 points a game, just enough to keep the inside-outside game going. And then they got McLemore and Young and a couple other guys that do a good job. McLemore is a phenom freshman that's doing a pretty good job for him. And, you know, you don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch. And I'm sure there's 20 analysts out there with 20 different opinions. But I think that I think eventually they're going to right the ship. Although every time I pick Kansas in my basketball pool, when they're really doing well, they get thumped. So I quit picking them, and then they started doing good again. So
you never know.
And that's the beauty of college basketball. You know, that's why we watch it, and that's why we're fans, because it's unpredictable.
Well, that's one of the great things about March, absolutely, and we're gearing up for March. Mr. Gene Walker, what are your thoughts on this Kansas-Oklahoma game today?
I think that the Jayhawks are going to respond in a big way, if nothing else, to put it back in their coach's face for those comments the other day. I thought those were ridiculous comments that were made by Bill Self. I think that, if this is the worst basketball team since Naismith was there, and Naismith had some pretty bad teams because they were just trying to figure out how to play this game to begin with, then what's the point of walking out on the floor and going after it? You say things to motivate your team, and I'm sure in the end that's all it is. But I'm wondering if the reverse psychology here kind of works. We'll find out today. I'd see Kansas going out and winning the ball game. I don't think Oklahoma is going to be any match for them, really. But, again, it doesn't matter if you're going out and throwing up 8-foot air balls like they did that on TCU. It was just a simple matter of them coming out and not playing a good first half. And then by the time they got their act together a little bit, TCU realized they could actually win this thing at that point, and that's what closed them down. But they were showing signs of weakness before that game ever came up. You could see they were faltering before that. But I think they're going to respond today and beat Oklahoma. The question then becomes, and under your other guest comment, even last year when Kansas had, because I picked Kansas to go all the way last year, and they made the finals. But even in that game where they had a proven big man, they played very timid in that game, as they had played very timid against Ohio State. They were somehow able to get through that first game, but not the second. So they haven't had anybody really step up and replace Robinson as he went to the NBA. And I like your comparison with the guy down low, the 5 spot. When he's on, he's pretty decent. But anyway, they beat Oklahoma today, I think. But if they lose the game today after what Self said, then Jayhawk Nation should be a little concerned, I think, because now you said the one thing, the worst thing you could say about a team ever. And if that didn't get them going, I don't know, maybe this is a trend that's going to continue. I don't see it happening, though.
Well, you know what? I absolutely think that Coach Self motivated the Jayhawks. This ain't going to happen on his watch, and he made that very, very clear. Well, we're going to move on over to the SEC. Great matchup today. Mississippi State versus Florida. Obviously, the Gators is a great team, and you look at Florida's coming out of its first defeat in almost 2 months, and being without some of the top players that they have. On a positive note, a visit from Mississippi State might be exactly what the Gators need to get back on track. Mr. Kenny Barr, the second-ranked Gators look to rebound from their worst loss of the season by handing the Bulldogs an 8th straight defeat on Saturday's SEC matchup. In a stunning 80-69 loss at Arkansas on Tuesday, Florida is 18-3 and 8-1, and the SEC look nothing like the team that won its previous 10 games by an average of 25 points. So look at this matchup, Kenny, between Florida and Mississippi State. Is Florida the real deal this year?
No. I don't think they are. They play a reasonably soft schedule compared to a lot of teams you and I like to follow and stuff, and I don't think Florida is a top 10 team, actually. The SEC is mighty powerful in football, but they're just not all that tough in basketball this year. And although I like Billy Donovan and the style of coaching and the style of play they usually come out with and stuff, I think when he gets into the tournament, if he gets to the Sweet 16, I'll be really surprised. Ole Miss going to go in there and really give him about trouble. I think that people have kind of got their number. They saw how Arkansas put it to them, and they're going to attack the same way, and Florida's going to have to change some things defensively, or they're going to go into quite a little funk, I believe.
All right, Gene, Florida, Mississippi State, what are the keys that Florida has to do to keep the momentum going? I mean, we look at Florida, and they're on and on and off again. And as Kitty just stated, the SEC is not that powerful of a force in basketball. But Mississippi State has, in my opinion, this year a good potential to go deep in March.
Well, Mississippi State has often relied on an interior game and being able to play some pretty decent defense and then turn the gear on when they had to turn it on. And they're going to have to be that same sort of team today. I think Florida has always been about transition. I don't think that they're a good half-court team, though they definitely can shoot it in the half-court set. They like to move the ball. And it's one of those teams where if you can kind of slow them down somewhat, and sort of muck up the game and make it physical, Florida's had issues. I agree the SEC is not good in basketball, and that does sometimes take its toll, not so much in the regular season, but in the postseason, when you now play, even if you get to the second or third round, you're playing teams that are battle-tested. So today, Florida's going to have to get going. They're going to have to get running. They're going to have to get Billy Donovan's offense cranked up, and they're going to have to do, regardless of the fact that Mississippi State would like to play kind of a half-court game. And I'm not suggesting Mississippi State can't run, because they certainly can. They've got some very quick point guards. They can move the ball, especially off the rebound. They create quickly, but they are the kind of team that would not – I don't think running tit-for-tat with Florida would be a good idea.
Well, absolutely. They can't run tit for tat. They've got to play their own game. Well, guys, we got to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to continue this college basketball segment. Kenny, can you stay around or do you got to go? I know this was a little bit longer than you anticipated staying with us today.
Got to run a few errands before noontime when some places close. So I'm going to have to call it a day, Tom, and I appreciate you having me on. And we'll talk to you next time.
Anytime. Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk, hanging around and talking some college hoop with us as well. Thanks for filling in with us there, Kenny, as Preston wasn't able to make it on today. But Gene Walker's with us, and we're going to be talking some more about the matchups today. But we're also going to get into some conversation on our MLB side of what's going on in spring training. As these teams get ready, we're going to be talking about the Cactus League here in just a few moments. But we've got a few more college games to break down right here on the Balance Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports. Mark Adele, President Che. Well, I tell you what, we're talking about bringing out our Adidas. You remember this song there, Gene Walker, from Run DMC back in the day, brother?
Yes, brother, I do. I remember a King of Rock and a Rock Box and I'm Bad by LL Cool J. You better believe it.
I tell you what, I remember when the rap groups, you know, I'm not a big fan of rap per se, but I like the old rap. I remember when like groups like Run DMC and Aerosmith got together, did a pretty cool duet called Walk This Way. You know, just all the old stuff. We dig deep in the archives for Bumper Music here on the Balance Radio Network. Well, obviously, the Adidas was an appropriate thing because we're continuing to talk about some college basketball, and I want to jump back over to the Big Ten conversation real quickly because we have a great matchup today at noon coming up here. Obviously, number 3 Michigan and Wisconsin. Wisconsin 16-7 and 7-3 in the Big Ten, and Michigan 21-2. And we know what one of those twos is, and 8-2 in the Big Ten as well. And obviously, if they could do well with the poor performance that IU had earlier this week. If they could do well there in Madison, Michigan very well could be back in the number one slot. So we look at the Michigan, and we look at the Michigan Wolverines against the Wisconsin Badgers. Great matchup within the Big Ten, but certainly has some huge implications for Michigan as they try to regain their number one spot. Gene?
Yeah, I mean, I think this probably is a better game for Wisconsin than Michigan at this point because Wisconsin is probably one team that's not ranked in the conference that should be. And, you know, I think that obviously they struggled the other night with Iowa. They'd lost to Iowa two previous times, including last year. And they probably, for all practical purposes, should have lost to Iowa again the other night in Madison. But the Hawkeyes have a real trouble with closing games out themselves. At least they're competitive now. But Wisconsin, obviously, given IU problems and fits, they're a typical Ryan team that loves to just get you into playing their style of basketball. And their style of basketball is as counter opposite right now to what Michigan is looking to do as any two teams could be. If there is a real deal in the conference, it's the Michigan Wolverines. Meaning that if all the teams in the conference were firing on every cylinder they have to offer, the Wolverines are the team at their best now, that could make a run to the championship game this year. And that's not saying that Indiana couldn't, but I just think that when you talk about the talent level of what Michigan has to offer, Hardaway and company have shown to me time and time again that at their best, they're the best team in the Big Ten, and they will beat Wisconsin today. The caveat to that, though, is if we look up at halftime and the score is in the 20s for both teams, then that prediction went right out the window. But short of that, Michigan should win this game.
Well, and I think Michigan will win this game, but I think you're right about Wisconsin. Wisconsin certainly has the ability to be a hot team and be one of those sleeper teams that nobody's looking about, talking about. But now we move on over and we talk about the other Michigan team playing today against Purdue in the Big Ten. Obviously, Michigan State coach Tom Izzo is one of the best in the industry. Certainly has to be somewhat disappointed with the performance of his team overall. Let's just put it this way. They aren't where they normally are this time of the year, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Obviously, they're winning games and so forth, but they go against Purdue, and on paper, Purdue just really isn't putting it together. This probably isn't going to be a good matchup, but Matt Painter and the Purdue Boilermakers are absolutely at a point where they could start turning their season around. So what are the keys to this game, Michigan State against Purdue?
Well, again, much like Wisconsin, Purdue relies on you playing at their level and their speed. And, again, it's amazing how much contrast we have in these matchups today. Michigan State has always been a team that pushes the ball. Izzo is one of the few coaches, however, that can truly transform a transition ball club into a half-court set team. And he sets a lot of stuff up with quarter traps three-quarter court trap, half-court defense that makes the other team sort of get out to the point now where when they finally get their offense set up, half the shot clock or two-thirds of the shot clock might be gone before they feel comfortable in it. And Michigan State hasn't done that this year the way that they've done it in the past. Purdue basically doesn't have the offense of the horses to try to run this race with them. So what they're going to probably do is try to employ the same theory on defense and not let Michigan State get up and down the court. Again, referencing the Iowa game earlier this year, Michigan State has struggled when teams decided not to back up. When teams decided to try to actually force them out of their comfort zone, Michigan State has not responded the way they were last year when Draymond Green was down there to sell him down in the post. The point guards isn't always employed. And I think Purdue could find themselves in a tight one today for a while if they can do the same team, the same kind of game, that the team that I mentioned before had done. But if they can't, Michigan State will win the ballgame.
Well, absolutely. And I honestly don't see that Purdue can put enough together against Tom Izzo, but I could be absolutely wrong about that. Well, I want to move on past the college basketball. Unfortunately, this show, as always, we run out of time faster than what, which is always a good problem to have. But we want to make sure that we get everything in as well. Well, as we move on into a different segment on the MLB, and I had a really cool bumper set up, and you know I hate it when that happens, Gene. You got everything ready to go, boom, it's gone that quick. So we'll have to catch that bumper another time. Going to move on over to the Cactus League. Obviously, your Chicago Cubs, Cincinnati Reds are in the Cactus League, and let's talk about spring training this year, and let's talk about some of the what's going on with these various different teams. I want to start with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Obviously a great team to watch, a fun team to watch. I always like watching them. They're certainly one of my favorite teams outside of the St. Louis Cardinals. That's a given. Anybody listening to the show knows that my loyalty and love goes to the Redbirds. But I do like the Arizona Diamondbacks. So, any thoughts on the Arizona Diamondbacks as we move into spring training and we start talking about the Cactus League and the Citrus League? Obviously, last week we broke down a little bit on the Citrus League, and we want to spend some time talking about the Cactus League and, of course, your Chicago Cubs.
Well, I mean, Arizona's a bit of an anomaly or an enigma, I guess is the best way to put it. They've been very streaky over the past couple of seasons. There's times when you watch them and you think that they're not going to beat a team on their schedule. And then there are other times when they're like, they've got the perfect combination. Who are all these no-name guys putting all these wins together? Upton, part of a trade, or they talked about a no-trade clause for him before the season started and that he was going to invoke that. And then they're trying to work out a deal to get a couple players their direction. Arizona, to me, from what I know about them, they start out the season pretty decent, and somewhere along the way sort of lose their gas. And up until San Francisco's pitching really took hold the last two or three seasons, they were a threat to win that division because with the McCourt situation in Los Angeles, San Diego obviously up until last season was just absolutely horrific. Arizona had a puncher's chance of winning that division. But then all of a sudden, second half rolls around last year, San Diego makes a move in the division, the Dodgers were playing pretty well considering everything that's going on. With San Francisco's pitching and the added hitting that they put in, that Bochy got to work with, Arizona became non-colada. This season, for Arizona to really step up, you got to start looking at the 3, 4, and 5 spot in their staff. How many games are these guys winning? And who are the bats that are going to keep them going? If you're going to play a small ball mentality, that's fine. But then your 1 and 2 spot really have to be the kind of guys that can get on base on a consistent basis with a ton of speed. That's something they've been able to do in the past. I'm not so sure that they've made the moves to really fortify that, though, in the long haul. And even if they get that going, who are the power hitters that are going to protect each other down that 4, 5, and 6 spot to keep the windmill rolling, to keep the circus going? and get the stakes on the base paths. And that's what I'm looking for this year, is if, in fact, that's what they're going to be doing, then they might have, a puncher's chance I mentioned, but San Francisco is definitely the class of that division.
Well, absolutely. Do you have your radio up there? Okay, I think we're there. I'm getting some feedback. Anyway, obviously, we're just a few short weeks away from starting there on February 23rd at the Diamondback Salt River Fields. And I tell you what, I love to watch these spring training games, Gene, especially at fields like Salt River, surrounded by some of the most beautiful mountain views in all of baseball. So it makes you envious to be there. And we move on, and we look at your Chicago Cubs. I don't like talking about the Cubs because I'm a Cardinal fan. No, I'm just kidding with you. Obviously, the Cubs have a lot of potential. They have been trying to do the right things over the last couple of years to get in the postseason. Now, do you buy into the curse that they'll never get back to a World Series? Do you buy into the series, the curse that they cannot win in the postseason? Or, like every other Cub fan out there, this is a new year. Let's go, Cubbies.
Well, I'll buy into the curse, the fact that we've never been able to identify our real talent in our pitching staffs over the years and keep them. If you go back to Greg Maddux, there's a prime example of one guy that should have had the Brinks truck rolled up for him even early into his career. He was a junk ball pitcher that defined a brand new strike zone. I swear to you, Greg Maddux changed the strike zone forever in the major leagues. We didn't keep him, and he ends up going on to Atlanta, gives them all their best years, and comes back. By the way, Dontrell Willis, there's guys that have been in a Cub uniform in the minors that weren't kept. And so the one time that we actually do put a pitching staff together around 03, we had the team. That 03 team was better than the Yankees, they're better than the Marlins, they're better than all of them, as far as pitching and hitting. But we didn't close the deal with that. We just haven't been the same since. And until I think Theo Epstein is sort of in a home wait period right now, similar to what he did in Boston in a certain sense, because I think he's going to let a couple expiring contracts go. And I think what's going to happen is he's going to start moving in and cultivating the talent that's in Des Moines and AAA, bring up a couple guys on some short contracts, some tweener guys, to get some chemistry built, and then make a big free agent move, not this season, but next. That, I think, is his basic MO, and if he does, they should be fine with that. Whether that will result in the World Series or not, the odds say no, but if you listen to Back to the Future, 2015 is our year.
Well, I hope so. Well, obviously, their first preseason game is against the Angels at 1:05, February 23rd, there in Tempe as well. Well, every year, I do this every year. It's kind of like a tradition for the Cubs. I try to play this for all the Cub fans.
Baseball season's under.
I hear you singing right along with it, along with all the rest of the Cub fans. But you know, it's no secret that I'm a die hard Cardinal fan. So, but I tell you what, that certainly is a tune that Cubby fans play all over, and we'll have a lot of time to talk about the Cubs and probably make fun of them as well, but that's part of the fun. It's like, you know, Yankees and Red Sox. It's part of the fun about being a Cardinal fan is I get to make fun of the Cardinals. We'll talk a little bit about the other team over there in Chicago, the Chicago White Sox. Always make a good presence out there, and they just have not been able to put it together over the last couple of years. What are they doing here in the off season and in spring training for the Chicago White Sox to dominate over there in the National League?
They're going to have to deal with, first of all, the fact that their middle relief is just atrocious. You talk about a team that was scoring runs right and left. It was the White Sox in the first half. Their offense was on fire. They absolutely could not be stopped in a 3- or 4-game series against any pitching staff, any combination. And if they had a game or two and they didn't score, they still came back out and made up for that offensively. And despite all that run production, they were losing games 11-10, 12-8. Just ridiculous scores. So the emphasis for the White Sox this year is middle relief, 4 and 5 slot pitching. It's pitching for these guys. They didn't keep Euclid. So he moves on to the pinstripes, the other pinstripes, I guess. And I just think that their hitting is fine. But they don't get an answer for the late 6, 7, and 8 innings. They're going to run into the same thing. The only reason the Detroit Tigers were able to be as inconsistent as they were and make it was because they found a way down the stretch to shore that up, and because the White Sox absolutely fell on their face. Otherwise, the White Sox are in the playoffs.
Well, I tell you what, I'm looking for a lot of big things from the Chicago White Sox. Actually, I tell you what, this year could be a year where we could see the Chicago White Sox really heavy in that pennant race. And I always like to make my predictions early here so that I can go back and play the archives and say, hey, I told you so way back when, before even the very first spring training game was. The Chicago White Sox are going to be heavy in the pennant race this year. Obviously, they start their season off as well on February 23rd. They're at Camelback Ranch, White Sox at the Dodgers. You know, every time I hear Camelback Ranch, I want to make a joke that it's probably not appropriate, but I won't make it. But every time I hear Camelback Ranch, there's a joke out there that I probably shouldn't make that just isn't very PC. Well, speaking about PC, a team that I, as a St. Louis Cardinal fan, have really begun to have a thorn in my shorts, if you will, and I hope that we do not have to deal with them this year, but I'm probably 100% wrong with that. So as a fan of the Cardinals, there's another team that I love to hate, and that's the Cincinnati Reds. Although I was a big fan of the Cincinnati Reds back in the day, the Big Red Machine, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, all of those great greats of the Cincinnati Reds. They're trying to bring that back. They almost had it done last year. The Cincinnati Reds, obviously, followed very heavily here regionally here in the Indianapolis market, but the Cincinnati Reds are a powerful team in the National League Central.
You know, obviously when you have a storied past, you always hope to duplicate that past. And how do you? The answer is you don't. Cincinnati, I don't think we'll ever see anything like the 70s again there in the Queen Cities, ever. And how would you? If you look at the 8 guys that were playing back in the 70s, of those 8 guys, what were 5 of them all-stars, if not 6? That's insane. And then Billingsley, and there was pitchers back then that were amazing. The 90s rolled around with Sabo, and they had that 1 year. And then last year, Dusty Baker goes in and does a phenomenal job. A phenomenal job managing that Reds baseball team. Because you got to remember that Votto stays healthy. It depends on where they're seated, but this was a team that he was able to steady the ship despite the big injuries, get them in the playoffs. And yet, they had the Giants dead to rights. They weren't the only team to. They didn't close the deal. And when you're coming off another series in which a Dusty Baker-managed team, who I respect tremendously, didn't close the series when they had it dead to rights, how does that affect them? Well, I'll tell you how it affected the Cubs in they weren't able to close the deal and even back into a wild card. Will that be the fate of the Reds this year? Only time will tell. But I really think right now that I'm pulling for Baker. He's one of the best guys in baseball, one of the classiest people in all sports. But it's no doubt that they are going to always have the shine on Dusty. The crook on Dusty is that his teams get off to good starts and have no gas in the tank to finish the final rounds of the fight. And Cincinnati has been no different in that respect so far.
Well, absolutely, and I hope that they can finish the fight. I mean, the Reds are – I just wish they were in a different division. I just wish that they weren't a team that we had to beat in the postseason to make it happen. Well, you know what? And then we move on to our next team. And this is kind of a unique – give you a little bit of a unique trivia, I guess, maybe for those who want my stack of knowledge. Did you know that the Cincinnati Reds and the Cleveland Indians spring train at the same complex and have the same home stadium, if you will, there in Arizona, Goodyear, Arizona? They both play at Goodyear Ballpark, the Cleveland Indians. And you look at what they've been able to do as well in their own perspective. And the Cleveland Indians really have gotten a lot of respect back in the major league. I mean, no pun intended there. That's really about the only time we think about the Cleveland Indians is when we see that old movie, Major League. But these days, the Cleveland Indians really have demanded and got a lot of respect over in the National League, and they start their season off February 22nd, a spring training anyway, games against the Reds. They're at both of their home parks. They're at Goodyear Ballpark. Cleveland Indians, any thoughts on them this year?
You know, I think that Cleveland, basically, with the managerial shift that they had, that transition period hasn't really been – you know, and won't be very kind to them on a certain level. But if you ask a Cleveland Indians fan right now, and you know how baseball fans get, Tom, baseball fans are no different than any others and sometimes worse. If you feel like you should be somewhere and you're not, then you want to change. I don't know where Indian fans sometimes get that, because this is not a super stacked team with just nothing but MLB All-Stars right and left. The Cleveland fans have been very loyal over the years. And whether it was Seth, whether it was other guys, Eric Wedge, who's from Fort Wayne up here that now is in Seattle, they've had their opportunities, and they weren't able to cash them in. I think they're a long way from being a serious contender in the division. I think that basically what they're looking at right now is being in the upper maybe three. But if the White Sox, who you're very confident about, don't deal with their pitching this year, you could see Cleveland possibly in the second spot in the division behind Detroit.
Well, absolutely. And I, you know what? Here's the thing. I wish we had time to really get into more talk on the Cactus League. And we're going to do that as we build up over the next couple of weeks into the official kickoff of spring training. Obviously, pitchers and rookies have already reported to their prospective destinations. And next week, we'll spend some time in the Citrus League. But also, you know, over in the Cactus League, you've got the Rockies, the Royals, the Angels, the Dodgers. Obviously, what a phenomenal season. I wish we had time to break down the Dodgers and what they did last year, what they're able to do this year. And throughout the year, we'll have Mark Timmons from L.A. Dodger Talk on with us as well. Milwaukee Brewers, obviously the A's, the San Diego Padres, and again, the Giants, and the Seattle Mariners and the Texas Rangers. Next week, we'll kind of break down the Citrus League, and we're going to start putting spring training together here as we get the official start on the spring training deal there here on the Balance. We love covering baseball. We love covering racing. We love covering it all. It's just sometimes we just cannot get it all in at the same time. Well, it brings us to that time of the day when we get into our jungle rant. So we're going to go with you, Gene. Go ahead. You got 1 minute. Jump in the jungle, sir.
I just found out today with the other team. They've announced the Big Ten that they are not going to switch the name of the Big Ten, no matter how many teams they have. It's an absolutely ridiculous move by Commissioner Delaney and the boys up in Chicago. They haven't been the Big Ten since the mid-90s, since Clinton was a president. If you're going to give them the SEC for all their special needs kids and the academic horrific status of an SEC school, then guess what, Mr. Delaney? You need to go ahead and learn how to count. It's not 10 teams. And by the way, if you can which 10 are in and which 10 and which 4 are not part of the conference, ridiculous.
All right, Mr. Gene Walker of Indiana Talks, thanks for the rant, sir. We'll catch you next week, hopefully here on The Balance, and we're going to break down some more MLB as well next week and college hoops and racing. Thanks so much to Josh Timmerman, Kenny Barr, and Gene Walker for joining us, guys. That's going to do it. That's going to wrap it up. That's a wrap, as they say. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. We'll see you next week right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.